Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the Locked On Wolves fan rag site for written content from Adam King, as well as prior podcasts. Today we have another edition of Prospect Wednesday, where I check out a Minnesota Timberwolves prospect, where they somebody could take in the draft who I think would make a good fit for the team. Last week we had Mitu out of USC, the power forward. Today we're going to be looking at the shooting guard, small forward, kind of hybrid, Troy Brown out of Oregon, the freshman. We're going to be checking him out and why I think he might be a fairly good fit for this team. Now, he's not necessarily a lock. None of these guys I'm talking about are going to be a lock necessarily for the Timberwolves. I'm not saying that any one of these guys are for sure a grab for the Timberwolves, or that the Timberwolves have an overly excited amount of buzz around any of these players as of right now. I'm just looking at prospects after reading a bunch of mock drafts and continually reading mock drafts. You saw last night the lottery pick and the draft order has come out. Been established. Suns with the number one pick was one of the breaking news from last night. So if you are listening to this show, then I'm not trying to say that any one of these guys is the best player necessarily for the Timberwolves. I'm just right now selecting a few guys that I think would make good additions to the team, and they are in that range at 20, at number 20 that the Minnesota Timberwolves could realistically grab, as they have not traded up or anything like that yet. So with that Utah pick, it's originally the Oklahoma City Thunder pick that they acquired from Utah after dealing Ricky Rubio. They have the 20th pick, and Troy Brown is my second prospect that I'm looking at for the Timberwolves. Now, you get a mixed bag with Troy Brown. You get a mixed bag. He averaged 11.3 points per game, 6.2 He had 3.2 assists per game. And then if you're looking at his stats, he also had the 6.2 rebounds per game. He shot 44% from the field, 74% from free throw range, and 29% from 3-point range. He averaged 3.1 attempts from downtown as well per game. So not bad stats. The freshman did fairly well. You saw him playing off ball primarily, and in that spot where he's either playing the 2 or the 3, you kind of expect him to play a little more off ball, since Oregon is going to run most of their play through their point guards, and they're going to like ball handlers to be surrounded by shooters. Troy Brown, it's interesting. You have a lot of games where he kind of goes away a little bit, and I'm sure you're wondering, me starting out, there's a few games where he goes away. You see a lot of games where he's got 4 or 6 points, not really blowing away in the stats, and he's not really throughout the season at Oregon. He was never one of those guys who was going to explode with points. And so this seems like kind of a negative way to start out the prospect that I'm looking at for the Timberwolves. But you see him. The thing I like about Troy Brown is, even though he shot 29% from 3-point range, he was pretty good at catching and shooting from downtown. But he didn't stick to that. You see, guys in college, there's plenty of guys in college who, when they think they need to catch and shoot, that's all they do, is they wait for that that pass, and then they just lob it up right away. I like how Troy Brown, he does do a lot of catch and shoot, and there are games where he's really successful catching and shooting. You saw, I think there was the Utah game is a good example, not the second one where he had 4 points, but it was at home against Utah on the 29th. There was plenty of times where he's catching and shooting and popping off for a few 3-point attempts that were good to go. and you saw him go 2 for 5 from the 3-point line. I think that's a better version of him, where he's knocking down a couple catch and shoot threes, and then you have him moving inside. And that brings me to my larger point, where when you see him knock down a couple of those catch and shoot threes, it helps lead to him, his moves inside the paint are a lot better. And he does have, he can dribble the ball fairly well. He does have some moves where he can create his own shot a little bit. He can bang around downtown. He's weighs in at 215 pounds, a 6'7" freshman. So he is a bigger athlete who can bang around a little bit, throw a little bit of weight around down the paint. And he does have some nice moves inside. He does have a little bit of a dribble to create some of his own shot. So you do have the games where he's not shooting very well from outside. You do have the games where he's going 1 for 4 or 1 for 5. And that does slow him down a little bit. Not all of those games are bad games for him. But if he's going 0 for 3 from outside, like you saw early in the season when he was playing at Ball State, 0 for 3 from outside, and then he ended up with a 1 for 5 shooting day and only 4 points. And I think that if he can hit a rhythm a little bit from outside and help open up his game, I think that helps him create a lot more. Because if you have people who are playing tighter to him on the 3-point line, because they see that shot, I think that helps him create down low. I think that helps him get down into the paint. I think he's one of those players that if he hits a big shot early, he's going to have a good game throughout the rest of the game. And maybe momentum, a little bit of a momentum drive for a player isn't necessarily what you want out of a first round pick. But I think that if his shooting continues to get better, and we've seen with plenty of players in the NBA, you can take somebody who has raw shooting talent and then create him into a really solid piece on your team. So if you grab him and help build on his shooting, I think that will help his game tremendously. And I think that helps build his ceiling, because he can create and he can do some, he has some moves inside other than shooting from outside that will help add to his offensive value. And so I like that he can be, I like that if you draft him and you play him off Butler and Teague, he can do some of that catch and shoot stuff, but he's not isolated to that, and he can create off of that. And I think that he would pair well with Towns. I think that he would make some things open up down low for Towns, because if he's trying to work down low and Towns is in that 15 foot area, he can pass it out, throw a quick pass to Towns. And then I think that the offense off of those two, there's some potential there. Some other things about this player. He did average 6.2 rebounds. He's definitely not afraid to go grab some boards. He's had some really nice games off the glass. And if you're looking at games where he has only 4 points, 6 points, I do like that he could contribute in other ways. So against the game against Ball State, I was talking about 8 rebounds, even though he had 4 points. Against UConn, 6 points, but he has 8 rebounds. And so he's contributing other ways. Now, again, there are games where he does disappear a little bit. You see Oregon State, 6 points, and then he only has 3 rebounds. So that you see him going away a little bit for some of these games, but there's plenty of games. UCLA, 4 points, 8 rebounds. There's plenty of games where he is grabbing a lot of rebounds when he's not knocking down shots. And so I like that he finds ways to contribute, and he finds ways to add to the team's effort off on the floor, even if he is not necessarily knocking down shots and grabbing points for his team. Some other things when you're looking at this player, when you're looking at stats for Troy Brown, the freshman out of Oregon, he did take 3rd in the Pac-12 last season, 55 steals. You pair that, you take the good with the bad. He was 6th in the Pac-12 in turnovers, 86 turnovers. So I do like that he's around the ball and getting some steals, creating turnovers. And I like that he is kind of making plays on the defensive side outside of just rebounding. That said, he turns the ball over, and He's going to make some sloppy plays, and that's part of the contribution for what makes him kind of disappear in a game is sometimes he's just turning the ball over way too much, and he can't really be trusted to handle the ball on certain days. I think that this prospect is pretty raw, and I think that there's a lot of guys in that 20th pick range. I think there's just a lot of guys in this draft that are pretty raw, and you're going to need to see a lot of growth from a few specific areas. But when you're talking about a guy like Troy Brown, and even this was true of a guy I really like and I think is more polished, talking about last week, Mitu. But both these guys, if you polish up a couple things, they can really be a big contributor to your team. And I think that they really fit into the system at the Timberwolves, because I think that they offer some long defensive potential. They offer some solid rebounding, and I think especially in the case of Troy Brown, I think you can get him to shoot more three pointers than anybody else is shooting right now on the Timberwolves, now that Jamal Crawford has left the team. So I think that it's important to polish up his shooting. I think that a player who builds off his three-point shooting in a lot of games like he does, I think that would be good for the Timberwolves, because they need more three-point shooting. And so if you can grab a rookie who could possibly give you some shots off the bench from range, that would be helpful for them. I think that he is a great addition, because he helps fill some depth need at forward. And I think that if you go play larger, and he can fill that shooting guard, or you can play small ball and throw him in one of the forward spots, I think that gives them some versatility, and I like his defensive potential as well. So things you need to polish up with him: you need to make sure that he keeps the turnovers down. You need to make sure that he's not disappearing from games entirely. You need to make sure he's growing on his defensive ceiling, his shooting. But the potential there is he does have a couple offensive things that I think would really help the Timberwolves. I think that his defensive potential is there, and he's a long athlete. And I like that not only on the defensive side he's going to get after boards, but he's also going to try and get into passing lanes, disrupt some of the other team's offense. So some really good things with this player. I like Troy Brown a lot. Then my favorite prospect for the Timberwolves, I'm not going to reveal him next week, maybe a couple weeks from now. I have a prospect in the bag that I really, really like for the Timberwolves, but Troy Brown, really solid pick there, and I don't think too maybe some worry for some of these picks that I'm mentioning. Are they reaching? Are they going too high? From what I've seen, a lot of mock drafts that I've read, a lot of reports that I've read, a lot of analysis about players that I've read, they have Troy Brown. Even if you're not looking at mock draft, if you're just looking at pure prospect evaluation, a lot of people have Troy Brown in that 17 to 22 range, so definitely not a reach if you're taking him at 20th, and there's a potential, some people think there's a potential that he could even be going earlier. So I think that he's right in that talent pool that the Timberwolves are looking at. He's right there with the best of them, and I think that he has a lot of potential, and he has a pretty high ceiling, just as far as one of those hybrid guards, guard forwards, and a continually positionless game that is the NBA. We're gonna take a quick break from some sponsors, and then we have another special segment moving on from Prospect Wednesday for you guys. So we just covered Troy Brown, freshman out of Oregon, one of the prospects that I'm looking at for the Timberwolves to draft in this coming draft, come the summer, when there's an opportunity to add some fresh talent to the roster that you can pay for on the cheap. Troy Brown was my second guy that we were looking at as far as who the Timberwolves could potentially take and how they fit into the team, who are some of the really solid-looking fits for the Timberwolves. Now we're going to get to a segment from the Locked On Raptors show. We haven't really covered it yet on this podcast, a little late to the party, but Dwayne Casey, if you haven't heard yet, he was fired after a Toronto Raptors franchise-leading win season, 51 wins. Not 51 wins, but he was fired. I can't think of how many wins they had off the top of my head. This is some good on-air stuff right here. I'm a professional for sure, but some really solid play from the Raptors, grabbing the number one seed, and yet Troy Brown is fired. Yes, 59 wins. Excuse me. Sorry, folks. 59 wins from the Toronto Raptors, and Troy Brown is still fired. We have a segment from the Locked On Raptors show outlining everything you need to know about that situation. Hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the Locked On Wolves show. Here is the segment from the Locked On Raptors.
Hey, how's it going? This is Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors, here to break down the breaking news that Dwayne Casey, the 7-year head coach of the Toronto Raptors, has been let go by the team. This coming, of course, after they were swept for the second straight season by LeBron James and the Cavs. And there is a lot to get into with this. It is a decision that is sort of surprising, but at the same time isn't. Of course, like, I don't think anyone could point to the series where the Raptors got swept by the Cavs and say that was all Dwayne Casey's fault. I think a lot of it is just LeBron is LeBron, and he is a powerful singular force who has owned not just the Raptors, but pretty much every other team in the Eastern Conference over the last decade. So I don't think it's a shocker that the Raptors were unable to sort of crack that nut. But I do sort of understand it from the perspective that, you know, he didn't have a great series. It was a tough time. He did not have a defensive game plan that was well crafted to stopping LeBron. And I think that kind of speaks to the larger issue of Dwayne Casey, which has always kind of been the thing with him, is that he's not the best tactical coach in the world. He is a very good, maybe one of the very best in the league at being a big picture relationships guy, and he did an excellent job with that. When he was hired by the Raptors were in the middle of nowhere, absolutely listless as a franchise, and I think the decision to hire him was built, you know, a lot around his ability to sort of connect with players and build a culture and form good habits, and he did that, and the Raptors have, you know, been the most successful they've ever been under Dwayne Casey. 5 years in a row in the playoffs, 50 wins, 3 seasons straight, 59 wins, of course, this season after completely changing over the offense. And, you know, it's really sad to see Dwayne Casey go. He's a fantastic guy. He is really easy to deal with the media, and he did a really great job shepherding this team along from a point that, you know, they really weren't supposed to become this good. You know, they were supposed to blow it up in 2013-14. They traded Rudy Gay. Kyle Lowry was almost out the door. And then, you know, after some friction, Lowry and Casey kind of figured things out, really sort of established a good bond. And, you know, you see where the Raptors are now. People clown them for losing to the Cavs, but no other team has gotten to play the Cavs in the playoffs 3 years in a row in the second or third round. And I think it speaks very highly that the Raptors are the team that keeps getting beaten by LeBron, as weird as that sounds. You know, they've gotten further than most teams in the East. They have won more playoff series than any team in the league aside from the Cavs and Warriors over the last three seasons. So I think it's, you know, you can clown them all you want, but in the grand scheme of things, the Raptors have become one of the more successful, stable model franchises in the NBA, and a lot of that has to do with Dwayne Casey. So moving on from him does seem like a bit of a strange pivot. At the same time, I do think there is some reason to it. And I think, you know, part of the reason that, you know, I think the reflection of Dwayne Casey is that he's been so successful at building the culture and building the team from, you know, the ground up and sort of getting this big picture thing just sort of hammered down to its science. Like, the Raptors are just a really well-run team in the regular season. They win a lot of games for a reason. He's very strict with rotations. He gets guys in roles. They know their roles and they perform them every night. And I think that is honestly sort of the reason that maybe a change is needed, in that the Raptors have grown under Dwayne Casey to a point where they're no longer in need of a big picture coach anymore. They're in need of someone who's more of a tactical wizard, who can kind of look at a series and not take a game or two to adjust, who can kind of, you know, change things up and throw different looks out there that, you know, maybe Dwayne Casey's been a little bit slow to get to in the past. So, you know, I think the next coach is going to be someone who's more of a tactical genius. You know, Jerry Stackhouse is a guy whose name has been thrown out there. I kind of throw Stackhouse just from what I've seen from him at the G League team so far with the Raptors. He's made the finals 2 years in a row, but I'm not sure he's got sort of the tactical acumen that you would want in who's going to be the next head coach. You know, I think he's probably a guy, considering the job he's done as a development coach with the young guys at the G League, you'd probably want for a younger team. And if the Raptors are going to blow it all up and trade away Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Serge Ibaka, Jonas Valanciunas, then maybe Stackhouse is the guy. But I do think Casey getting fired kind of gives me the sense, at least, and this could change, of course, but I do get the sense that, you know, DeRozan, Lowry, you know, whoever else is going to be back next season for one last kick with a new coach. Hopefully a new message comes across. It's a way to sell it to the fan base that you're bringing back the same team that just got swept 2 years in a row, but it's going to have a different coach at the helm. And I do think that coach is going to be more of a tactical guy who is more sort of, you know, lauded for his in-game expertise as opposed to more of a big picture thing. Because I think the Raptors at this point probably believe that their franchise is stable enough and, you know, has come far enough and is strong enough, you know, as a culture and just sort of as an organization as a whole, that they can withstand not having a guy like Dwayne Casey to be the head coach who is so good at the big picture stuff. So, guys, I'm thinking about Nick Nurse is the lead assistant for the Raptors right now. He was sort of the architect of the offensive change the Raptors did this season, and, you know, it worked really well. And his playbook is deep, it's advanced, and he has been on the sort of short list of coaching candidates for a little while. He's interviewed for a couple jobs here and there, so I'd expect him to get a long look. And then also the report coming out from Mark Stein and others is that Mike Budenholzer is also someone that's high on Masai Ujiri's list. People joke about Mike Budenholzer and sort of what happened with the Hawks this season. I think it would make some sense as long as he's not getting any sort of, you know, general managership of the team. I think that's probably what they would want to steer away from. If he's looking for complete power like he wanted in Atlanta, maybe that'll be a difficult sell for him, and I think that would be a difficult sell for the Raptors as well on their end. But, you know, a guy like Budenholzer who, you know, while the Hawks were sort of known as this egalitarian, fun-loving team back in 2015 when they won 60 games, they were the second-best defense in the league. And maybe you can sort of count on Budenholzer to craft a better scheme to maybe go up against LeBron James. Here's the thing. No Raptors coach is changing the Raptors' fortunes against LeBron James unless LeBron James becomes a worse player, which doesn't seem to be on the horizon anytime soon. This, I think, is very much a PR move to try to sell to the fans that the team coming back is going to have at least a bit of a different voice and maybe sell it as some sort of way to get around LeBron. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think any new coach is scheming around LeBron James, but I do kind of understand the pivot here to maybe go from a bigger picture guy to a more tactical guy. I really do think that's what it comes down to. Dwayne Casey was a fantastic coach. He's going to be missed by a lot of people in Toronto, and you know, it's a big risk. There's a good chance that the next coach is not as good a coach as Dwayne Casey, and I think Casey should be scooped up by some other team almost immediately. I would bet like Orlando with Jeff Weltman, who was the Raptors GM last season. Maybe that's a candidate there. And you know, he's going to be picked up soon because he's an excellent coach. And any team that is in sort of disarray and needs to establish a culture should be calling up Dwayne Casey right this minute to get an interview set up. That's all I got on this for now. Check out Locked On Raptors. I'll have a full episode about all of this. We'll get into all the different angles of sort of the optics of the Dwayne Casey firing and sort of where to go from here, what kind of candidate the Raptors should be looking for, and maybe throw some names out there and maybe, you know, sort of hypothesize what else we're going to see from this offseason, which apparently is going to feature lots of change for the Raptors, a team that has not changed a whole lot in a bunch of years. So interesting times ahead for the Raptors. You can hear it all on Locked On Raptors with myself, Sean Woodley, and thanks for tuning in.
Daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.